Welcome. Welcome back to the Market Tech for episode 5. It's a live podcast series where leadership and product marketing intersect. The Market Tech is brought to you by our friends at the Compete Network, especially, you know, I have to thank Grayson and Adam McQueen. Without them too, honestly, this show is not possible. So really a special thank you to Grayson and Adam and our friends at the Compete Network. Today, you'll notice my co-host is not Morgan for obvious reasons. He's traveling the world, you know, complaining about how product marketing doesn't help his salespeople do what they're supposed to do. And it's always product marketing's fault. So we gave him a bit of a breather and we've brought in Julian Sauvage, a dear friend of mine. He's off Salesforce, Gong, Clary fame. I had the pleasure of meeting Julian at Gong when I was an advisor there, and he was leading the charge on product marketing, amongst other things. And I loved his approach, first and foremost, to leadership. His teams love him and they followed him where he goes. And then secondarily to product marketing, and we've been stuck at the hip ever since. So welcome, Julian.
Thank you. And there's worse things than being stuck with you, my friend. Thanks for having me. And special thoughts to Morgan. As you said, he's on the road.
Hopefully my wife hears what you just said. She disagrees most. But anyway,
I hope she listens to every podcast episode you're doing. I really hope so.
Thank you. And so today we are both going to explore this topic of product launches. In my 20 plus years of product marketing, I found that companies rarely, this is sad and dangerous, they rarely nail their launches. And launches are a crucial growth mechanism for every company, no matter the stage. And yet most companies are horrific at launching. And so when I was thinking about who do I know, there's a handful that really know launches in and out very, very well. And two of those are here with us today. They're both brilliant pros. They understand launches. They've led launches. They write about launches. They speak about launches. Our first guest, she's one of us. She's a product marketing leader. She now coaches and consults. If you're not following her LinkedIn posts and newsletter, PMM Camp, do so right after this episode. Welcome, fellow Canadian. Welcome, Tamara.
Thank you. So excited to be here. Got to represent Canada.
Yes, absolutely. I'm normally outnumbered on this show, so great to have you here. Our second guest was also a fellow product marketing leader, so she's been through the trenches. She's built product marketing teams, led product marketing teams, led many a launch, and then thankfully for all of us, she moved over to Serious Decisions, which is now Forrester. I met her whilst she was still at Serious, and she advises go-to-market leaders worldwide on go-to-market effectiveness, efficiency. I learned how to launch properly. I was doing launch many, many years before that, but I learned how to launch properly because of a talk that she gave at one of her product marketing community conferences. And I stuck to that discipline and strategic approach. So thank you, Beth, and welcome, Beth.
Thank you, Rowan. It's so good to be here.
Yes, yes. So let's get to it. We have so much to talk about. We're going to set the stage, if you don't mind. I will start with you, Beth, on the overarching role of product marketing in driving a successful B2B launch and, frankly, why it's crucial that product marketing captains the launch process. Yes, I'm a little bit biased, but I also believe there's the truth to it. Please.
Well, I do. I agree with you, to be honest. So the reason that product marketing should be running the launch process is they are sort of the bridge between the product teams and the market. And so they're in that unique position that can sort of understand what's going on in the market and in the product space. If product was running the launch, you know, they're much more focused on sort of making sure the product is coming, it's going to be ready. And that's an important job. So we don't want to dismiss that. As that role, they have a lot of responsibilities. They have to figure out the market opportunity for the product that's going to be launched or whatever offering is coming to market. They've got to prioritize the target market segments and those buyers. They have to understand the unique value proposition and create messaging that's really going to resonate with those target buyers. And they have to align all the stakeholders internally so that everyone's sort of marching to the same drum, I guess is the right analogy. And of course, they have to create the launch plan and then monitor its success and follow it through. So it's a big role, depending on how big the launch is, but it needs an orchestrator, a conductor, someone who is going to manage all these diverse and, you know, there is a lot going on in a launch. So all the diverse people and the diverse activities. So it's definitely needed to have somebody who's in that position. And we always think that product marketers are the right person for that.
Maybe I'll ask tomorrow if that's okay, like a similar question that I always say, a good launch brings everybody together, right? Which is both a blessing, but also kind of a curse because it's difficult. Can't get more cross-functional than that. And so tomorrow, what have you seen success and maybe the first steps to kind of create that alignment with the broader organization around the product launch or feature launch?
Yeah, that's a good question. And Beth, I love that analogy of the product marketer being kind of the conductor of the show. I've always thought of it similarly, but like this different analogy of a launch being like a puzzle. There's so many different pieces of it that you need to bring together. But one piece needs to be kind of sitting above it all and saying, okay, do we have all the puzzle pieces? Are we, you know, putting that bigger picture together? And I think for me, Julian, getting to your question, the most important thing is that if I'm the customer, I'm the prospect, I kind of use the term customer synonymously there. For me as a customer, I need to see that the launch feels like it was done by one person. It can't actually feel like there's many different people in that orchestra, right? And so as a product marketer, it's your responsibility, even if you're not actually creating all components of the launch, which you're not, how do you make it feel like one seamless experience for the customer? So I think for me, the first step is this concept of launch tiering. I think launch tiering can do a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to like enabling all of those teams to work together. Because one of the things I see happen is, you know, the product team who's been spending so much time building this thing, so it's this big thing that we're going to spend all this time on, put a lot of dollars and resources behind, Rowan, you know what I'm talking about. And then the marketing team says, well, actually, the market size for this is quite small. This is like a Me Too feature. It's actually not differentiated. And they think we're doing a really small launch. And so if ahead of time, the main stakeholder teams are aligned on how do we even think about launches? How do we think about resourcing launches? Then I think when it comes to the actual launch itself, if we kind of take some of the emotion and bias out of it, because we already have a bit of a rubric or some sort of framework to align us, like mentally, we have a mental model around how big is this going to be? So for me, that's like the most important thing to do before you even start thinking about launching products is build alignment on the framework itself.
I love it. And let's stay on this topic about launch, launch team. So product marketing is the captain of the launch. They can't do everything themselves. Julian, you talked about, you know, there's a cross-functional group and there's pros and cons to that. And I get it. And I just got off a call. I'm not going to name the company, of a cross-functional launch team. And my God, everyone and their mother, I think, is part of that team. It started out with a 12-person team. It's now ballooned to 27 because they have to be there. So there are pros and cons to that. But this is why it's so important to have governance and different parts of launch and different launch teams. So Beth, this is for you. How does establishing the launch team and governance of that launch team early in the process, like set the stage for success? And what are the roles that are essential to include in that launch team?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. And we get that a lot, actually. What we recommend is sort of, you might even have sort of tiering of launch. So I totally agree with the tiering of launches. That is absolutely critical. You might even do that for your launch teams, not use a different term than tiering, but you really want to have a partnership with the product management who's sort of running the product development aspects of this. So that's sort of your closest person that you're going to be working with. But you have to have somebody in the marketing side of that. And when I think of a launch, I think of it, it's like an integrated campaign. So you will be talking to all the marketing sub-functions. They'll be talking to the selling functions, possibly your channel players. So all of those people need to be somehow involved in the launch process. And you need to decide if they are going to be involved in the decision-making processes or in the informative processes. So you can have sort of different levels of launch teams, sort of like a broad 27 person launch team that's kind of informative, and you know, people can ask questions and they have, could have good ideas, but they're not going to be in the midst of creating all the strategy. You want to have a smaller team that's got sort of the basics of what the marketing impacts are going to have. So maybe your demand gen or PR media teams, and your product teams, your content, if you've got somebody doing that, maybe your customer success team or someone else who's going to be really critical and sort of making that launch really be successful at these new prospects, and possibly sales enablement or somebody who's responsible or helping sort of get those sellers enabled. So you want to think about those different kind of, you know, sizes of teams that you're going to be having for the launches. And then the other thing about governance that I think is really important is to think through, like Tamara said, like who are those key stakeholders who are making decisions? That's really important because you want to know who those people are and establish that with them that they are going to be sort of who gets decisions get escalated to. So if something goes amiss with the launch, and oftentimes it does, and it could be timing, it could be functionality, costs, I mean, all sorts of things can happen. You need to have sort of like who we're going to go to say, we're not moving the launch date, or we're not dropping that piece of functionality. This is going. And you want to have the recommendation. You guys, as product marketers, you guys are experts in this. You want to make a recommendation, but you want to make sure that the head of marketing, the head of product, head of sales, whoever is those sort of supreme leaders who are going to be making the final call, you know, you want to know who they are, and you want to be sure that they know that they're going to be in that seat, in that hot seat, if they have to make a decision like that.
I love it. I love it. I've used an example of just that. I typically, especially for tier one, some tier twos, I typically have an executive sponsor, one throat to choke, if you will, for all tie-breaking decisions. A tiger team, no more than a handful of people who make the strategic decisions you just talked about. And then a core team, in this case, it was supposed to be, you know, no more than 10 people. It's ballooned to 27. That gets the work done, if you will. So I love that. Sharing, if you will, of teams. And it's important to have that. But sorry, Julian, I know you have a question.
No. Yeah, I think we've all experienced the nightmare of having 27 people on the team. It's such a hard balance to strike, right? You want to include as many people. You also want to drive to decision and to execution. So maybe, again, question for you, Tamara, is on that launch team. Who do you think should be part of it? How do you strike that balance? And maybe you can share a time where when having that well-defined team actually made a difference on how smooth the launch went.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my thinking here is that there isn't a perfect answer of who needs to be involved. And I say that because every launch has a different goal. And so I know we spoke earlier about, like, how do we get teams enabled? How do we get the company on board? For me, part of that is about the why behind the launch. Like, why are we bringing this to market? And why does this matter for the customer and for our business? And like that why should actually shape what the launch team is. So for example, if this is like allowing you to enter a new market or allowing you to open up into a new ecosystem, maybe partnerships is really important. And we actually need a representative from there in the main stakeholder team, or maybe not, you know? And so I would just recognize that. But then I think I just kind of rally my stakeholders. I love, Beth, what you mentioned about the PM being such a critical part, because I see folks leave the PM out of the launch team sometimes, and they kind of keep them separate for either the launch team doesn't kind of want that PM in there, or the PM is too busy. But I think when the product manager is able to come to those meetings, represent, answer questions, demonstrate the product, you actually can move faster to decision-making, I would say. So one of the examples that kind of came to mind where I think it could have gone disastrously because it was so complex, but we had to make some really hard decisions about like who we let in that first tier launch team, Beth, to your kind of analogy, or who we kind of put in the second round, was when I was at Kajabi. So I was the VP of product marketing at Kajabi, which is a platform for creators. And we really needed to build a community-focused product, but we were behind the market. So we actually made an acquisition. We acquired a company called Vibely, which was an existing community product. And we needed to very quickly, like we had less than 3 months, fully integrate that product into Kajabi as Kajabi communities, We needed to launch Kajabi Communities, and we needed to deprecate Vibely. And so you can already tell how complex this is. So it was a launch. It was a deprecation. There's two customer bases because we needed to communicate to the Vibely customer base, hopefully get them over to Kajabi or let them know their product wasn't going to exist anymore. We had a lot of historical baggage with the Kajabi customers who were waiting for a product like this. And so in that case, we actually needed to decide like who from the Vibely team would be on that main committee, who from the Kajabi team would be on that main committee. And I think what we ended up doing here was also, Beth, to your point, was we actually put an integrated campaign manager in place. And so the PM team or the PMM team, the product marketer, was responsible for the overarching strategy. In that smaller committee, we had a representative from Vibely. We had some people from Kajabi. And then the level down was run by an integrated campaign manager. And they were actually accountable for mapping out the customer journey for both sets of customers, for making sure all of those assets were created and consistent. And the PMM had that overarching kind of approval, but they didn't have to manage both committees. So that was like one way where we actually managed to run quite quickly with what could have been a lot of stakeholders in a very complicated way.
I love that. And you do need all those people, because when you're thinking about your audiences, right, and both internal and external audiences, and I know people typically just focus on the external audience, your customer, your prospect. Tamara, it's tomorrow.
You can call me T. A lot of people just call me T. That simplifies it.
T, beautiful. So can you give us an example of a launch in which like aligning with a specific audience segment drove that campaign success, the one that you just did that you wanted to share? But audience alignment is something that a lot of launches don't get right. They're very vague. So give us an example, if you don't mind, of like aligning with a specific audience segment to ensure campaign success.
Yeah, that's a great question. Segmentation is like near and dear to my heart. So I always love when we start with this. So that one is maybe not the best example, but I'll give another example from when I was at Kajabi. So like everyone, we wanted to integrate AI into our product. We knew this was going to be a bit of a long road ahead of us. We didn't even know what we were building or who it was for. But we were able to really quickly identify a customer kind of audience opportunity that had amazing impact on the business. And so what we did was the product team overnight, like over a weekend, kind of did a hack where they were able to build this AI tool. It was super basic. You put in an idea for a course and it would create a course outline for you. And honestly, we were just seeing if we could build AI. But concurrently, the product marketing team had actually been doing customer interviews with early stage creators. And we were identifying this opportunity where all of these early stage creators were saying, I have all of these ideas, but it's so hard for me to bring these ideas to life. I don't know what to do. I don't know how this actually could turn into a product or a digital product. And so we had this idea and we're like, wait, what if we paired what product is building with this market opportunity? And so we actually brought the interviews back to the product team and we said, hey, we can serve this audience. And within a couple of weeks, it was 6 weeks from idea to launch, we were able to build 6 tools on AI that lived completely outside of the product. This is what allowed us to move quickly. So we built 6 tools that solved this very concrete problem for this customer segment. We launched it as what we call the AI Creator Hub. And we hosted it on our website rather than in-app because we wanted to appeal to early stage creators who mostly were leads at this point. They weren't paying customers yet. And so because we were able to focus on that customer segment, we got value into the hands of customers. We were able to unlock a new lead channel for Kajabi. But also even better, because we got people using our AI solutions, we could see which use cases were used most. And so we then funneled that insight back to the product team, and that gave them the intel they needed to focus on what to build into the product first. And so it was a bit of like a meta launch there, because then that allowed us to then launch other ones. But honestly, if we hadn't focused on that one really specific target customer, which we weren't focused on with the rest of our product necessarily, we would never have been able to kind of bring that launch to life in that way.
Now that we know that Rowan can say Tamara's name right, I'm going to ask, not Tamara, but I'm going to ask Beth, if that's okay. Rowan, you passed the test. Beth, if that's okay with you, we're going to stay on that topic around like objectives and KPIs. Of a launch. And as we said, a launch is one form of an omni-channel integrated campaign, but we know that these also have their own objectives and KPIs, right? And so I think the question is, how do you align those? How do you define your launch objectives, align that with the existing campaigns? What's what's the one critical, I would say, objective setting practice that you've found being impactful when it comes to product launches?
So those are good questions. There's a lot in there. I'll go back to what Tamara said earlier. When she said something about you really need to understand the purpose of the launch. And so that little explanation you just did of like, okay, we're just sort of trying something out here. So that was sort of an experiment. But in any time you do a launch, you really need to understand why are we doing the launch? So you run to understand, you want to set the objective before you even set the goals. Like, is the objective to try out these new sort of little creator things and see which ones are the best use case to put in the product? Or is the objective something broader, like we're entering a new market, you know, bringing a whole new product to market? Are we just doing an add-on and maybe hoping for some cross-sell? Is it just a small enhancement that's going to like increase our retention rates? We want to understand what the goal is and what market segment or audience segment. That is the first thing that you need to figure out. And that really goes back to working closely with the product manager, hopefully influencing what's coming out of the roadmap, and really sort of set, you know, you, as Tamara said, you want to match what's going on in the market, what the market needs, to what's coming out of the product. So, you know, that doing that sort of matching and opportunity identification is really critical. And from there, you want to define, okay, what is our overall objective? Are we really just trying to get new logos, new revenues, like everyone has always been trying to do over the past many years? But now it's getting a little bit more nuanced, and you want to be very clear on those objectives. And from there, you can make quantitative goals. What are your KPIs that you're really trying to shoot for? And you might have one overarching goal, and then you might sort of break that down by different market segments or different launch audiences. And and Rowan knows that we talk about launch audiences. So you've got your prospects, you've got existing customers, but you've also got internal customers inside of the company. You've got sellers, you've got channel partners, and you've got influencers. There's a lot of different audiences that you are trying to influence as you take a launch forward. It's a big communication effort and enablement effort. So you might break the goals down into each of those audiences so that it's very clear what you're trying to have to achieve with each of those audiences. So that's how we kind of think about objectives and goal setting.
And I love that you said goals by audience. So first, itemize your audience, internal and external. Your leadership team needs different things versus your sales, versus your customer success. Your employees as a whole, you want to get them excited. So I love that you said craft an objective by audience. And this kind of maybe answers and again, I am the worst with names. Meetha, I know you're asking a question. If it's not Meetha, please correct me. Meetha says, Beth, Tamara, Julian, anyone take this? It relates to what Beth said. How do you decide whether a launch should focus on brand awareness versus engagement versus revenue? Like, do all launches ultimately aim to drive revenue and just revenue? You may have answered that with your goals by audience.
We think of this as almost like it almost depends on the market maturity or market situation. And if you have an existing market and you're planning an existing market, it might be pretty sophisticated and mature, and you don't need to do any awareness. I mean, you know, you're really just trying to, you know, beat the drum for more demand and sort of like, you know, cross sell and upsell and things like that. But if you take this offering to a new market, it might be a new geography or a totally different customer segment, they might not be that familiar with your offerings. You might have to do a lot in terms of building awareness. And that changes sort of the structure of a campaign. And a launch is a campaign. It just, you want to decide whether it's part of an existing campaign or if it's on its own campaign. And usually a tier one would be its own campaign, and lower level tiers might sort of fold into a broader campaign. But the campaign has all those different elements. It's building awareness, reputational activities, advertising, PR and media. And then you get down into more demand gen and sales enablement, channel enablement, and communication with your existing customers and things like that. So it almost depends on the market situation is kind of the short answer to that.
I completely agree with that. And I just want to add, like, I think this is one of those almost limiting beliefs that a lot of executives have around launch, which is it needs to drive like new customers in the door. It needs to drive net new revenue. If we take a step back, it's like, what are we actually trying to accomplish with this product? Because a lot of times, especially now, we're like, this is something that customers later in the life cycle are asking for. This is the reason people are leaving us, and that's why we built it. And it doesn't mean we can't promote this on our website. It doesn't mean that this might not play a role in someone's buying decision, but it just means it's probably not the first thing a net new customer is thinking about, because maybe they don't even experience this part of the product until 9 months in or whatever it might be. And so I love that you mentioned that launch is a campaign, because I agree, and a campaign can't be for everyone. And so for this launch of this campaign, maybe the priority is to drive increased retention, to decrease churn. And this is actually a campaign to customers. And that doesn't mean we're not going to promote this product to other people. But that's where, from my perspective, adoption campaigns come in and other like go-to-market tactics come in. And so I love that. I think it is one thing that holds people back, but like a launch doesn't have to always be market prospect facing.
Product marketers should be captains of launches. We established that. We established that there's different types of launch teams, not just one. There's a smaller group that was making decisions. There's another working group. So there's different types of launch teams. And for tier one launches, you probably do need a different set of launch teams. Objectives by audience, internal and external. I love that takeaway. And now, you're ready to craft this launch plan. It need not be 80 pages, 100 pages, but what are the core essential elements that a product marketer should have in their launch plan? Beth, let's start with you.
I'm going to go back to something I think both you and Tamara have said, which is like, you want to use this to align people. The launch plan, so, and just like everything else I've said too, there's different levels of a launch plan. So we start with a launch plan that is almost an executive summary. We call it the launch plan on a page. And I actually really like it. I think it's so useful. I've seen this be so effective in so many different situations, both with executives, because to Tamara's point, executives just think of launch and they're like, where's the revenue? You know, like they're very sort of single-minded about these things. And so they need some education and sort of, guardrails for themselves, especially if they're going to market and talking about stuff and it's not quite accurate. So you want to make sure that they understand what the objective is and what the goals are and who the audience is and all of these things. And also all the way down to the product engineers or the product developers. We've had somebody use this launch plan on the page and paste it up in front of all the product teams so that they're remaining aligned on why are we doing this. So what goes into the launch plan on a page? I'm just going to go over that a little bit. And this is not set in stone. It's just sort of some good recommendations. It's understanding what the objective is, as we've talked about, what the overall goal is. Is this just retention? We're trying to increase our retention, or are we really trying to get new logos? And there's all sorts of stuff in between. Is it cross-sell or upsell? All sorts of things. What's the launch tier? And then who the target audience is. What market segments, what buyers are we really going after? And then the goals and metrics by all those different audiences, Rowan, that you just talked about. And then a little bit about the offering capability, like what is the unique value proposition? What need is it solving? And what is the differentiator? Just so that people have the basics about that. And then a little bit about the launch strategy. Like are we really trying to build awareness or just like, oh, just bring them to this website because we want to really test out this thing, see which use case is most important. You really want to sort of just outline like, no, this is not going to be the like, huge fireworks type of launch. This is sort of a smaller launch that we're just going to be, letting customers know about something or testing something out or, moving into a new market space or something. But you want to sort of make sure that that's clear. That's just for an overall sort of summary. And we can put that on one page and with a timeline, and it's like got a lot of information. And then you would have a really detailed launch plan with all the activities and efforts and project timelines and responsibilities and all that stuff too that would fall out from underneath that.
Got it. And so once you have the exec summary, can you give us just an overview of what the core key elements are? We don't have to go into each one just yet, but what are the things, what are the sections that must be in a basic launch plan?
Okay. So I think that you want to have a timeline, like when is the actual launch and what are the main things before the launch and maybe after launch? What is the launch tier? What is the launch objective? What is the overarching launch quantitative goal? Is it increasing retention by 3 points or something like that? The buyer audiences, the launch audiences, the offering highlights, or you know, just a little bit about the offering, differentiators, unique value proposition, campaign strategy. I think those are the kind of core basics, the launch strategy, really. And sometimes like a big bang or sort of a slow drip kind of thing. There's a lot of different things. So more like that. And just, you know, very short bullets to just give people an understanding of like, oh, so I don't have to get 100 people behind me to get this done, or I do.
Love it. And Tamara and Julian, in your experiences from crafting launch plans, what are the core sections, core that need to be laid out in a that let's say Beth didn't touch on so far? What are the sections that are going to inform your internal team, your core team, to be able to go and do their work? Like, what are the sections that you typically include in a launch plan?
Yeah. So, I mean, one that Beth, you didn't mention that I like to include at like, even if it's a bullet point, as you mentioned, is like the pricing and packaging strategy, because I think this is something that is often an afterthought. And like, you as the launch team may not actually be responsible for this, or you may, depending on where product marketing falls in pricing and you are. But even not pricing or packaging a product is a strategy. And so like, is this going to be available in all tiers or all packages? Does this have a price point to it? Is it available for all customers, or is this going to be feature gated? If you have a trial, is this available in trial for full, or is it not available in trial or limited capability in trial? So I like to include that. It's also just a way to level up your launch team and your marketing team to think about pricing more strategically. The other component, and Beth, I think you hinted at this, was this concept of, how are we thinking about launch? Is this like a big bang launch, or are we going to take something like a rolling thunder approach? And so I love that you hinted at timeline, because I think one of the other areas where I see people fall down is they think of launch as a single point in time. They think of it as launch day. Everything happens on that day. Meanwhile, I think some of the most impactful launches are these rolling thunder launches. So it's like, just like a thunderstorm, you know, you hear the thunder in the distance. You start to feel the anticipation of it getting closer. As it gets closer, it gets louder. You're under the storm. It's the loudest. It's shaking you, right? Then the storm starts to dissipate, and it doesn't just end. It starts to roll out again, and you feel some sort of relief and some change. And so I for a lot of my tier one launches, I will employ a rolling thunder approach. And so including that, so that teams know, oh, this is something we're actually going to be rolling out, learning from, and iterating on for 2 months, as opposed to working towards one single point in time, I think is fairly important to capture in that document as well.
So thinking of it pre, like, how do you tease them the day off the launch? And then most people think day off launch is where our work is done. It's just beginning almost. There's a cadence here. I love
exactly
that.
It. It's like there could be a beta program, and people think of beta program as like a product activity. It's not. You need to be testing messaging. You need to be testing market fit. You need to be testing if the functionality is actually delivering the value you thought it was. So it could be a waitlist strategy. It really depends on your product and who your customer is. But then afterwards, to your point, Rowan, launch rarely goes as planned. And so what are we learning? So I love to actually sometimes include in that doc as well, what are our learning outcomes that we're working towards? So not just goals for the campaign, but what do we want to learn in the 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after launch, right? Because we can't learn everything, but we want to have a focused learning. And then maybe it's like, oh, one of these value propositions is way more preferred than the other one. We're seeing it land with sales reps way more. Great, let's actually swap that out and make that the leading value prop for the rest of our campaigns. Or maybe one segment of customers is adopting this way faster than we thought they would. Cool. How do we build like a mini adoption campaign to add on to this launch that maybe we didn't have planned ahead of time? So just thinking of how we iterate and kind of keep that thunder rolling afterwards is really important.
Julian, what are we missing here? What's in your launch plan for Salesforce Gong and Clary? Obviously,
we've covered a lot. So I love everything that Beth and Tamara just talked about. I always include obstacles and dependencies. I think that's a good one, right? That not everything is always easy, as we know. And I also like to include what's below the line. Like you want to show your internal stakeholders that you've thought about everything, and yet your intention is not to go after everything. And so you have like a slide that pretty much lists out all the de-scoped or the out of focus areas and assets. So these are the two additions I would add: obstacles and out of focus area items.
Love it. And we're going to take a question from the audience, open to everyone. How do you, Robert, thanks for the question, Robert, how do you align a single product launch with diverse audience segments? For example, what is a good way of establishing things unique to audiences versus common to all? So single product launch with diverse audience segments.
I think even asking the question is the right place to be, because so many people don't even ask that. So I liked Beth's suggestion earlier, like list out all of the audiences that could be a potential audience, right? I like to start with that and then narrow down. This is absolutely not for them. Either it's not even in a package they have access to, or, you know, good example could be if it's an SMB customer versus an enterprise customer and so on. So narrow it down to like the world of possibility. And then this is where I think if you are working with your product manager from the beginning in like pre-discovery, these are the questions you're asking as you're actually going through the product development process. And so this shouldn't necessarily be like a surprise or something you need to solve for launch, because you've already been narrowing it down. And again, this is where beta programs come in, where customer interviews come in. And what I'm doing during that process is I'm really teasing out who is super attracted to this value. Where are the problems that we can really solve and solve them in an impactful way? Who is that for? And are these, you know, top level problems that we see across all customers, or are these more niche, narrow problems for a specific subset of customers? And then by the time I get to the launch plan, it's just about right sizing that. And so it's okay to have 3-4 audiences. And maybe one of them you're like, you know what, they need to know about this, but it just needs to be like an email and maybe an in-app pop-up, because this could bring value to them, but it's not massive. And so we're just going to focus on the little slice of value that matters. But these two segments, these are the ones we're going to really focus on, because this could change the game for them. And so they're going to get the full campaign. We're going to target ads. We're going to make sure the account managers are setting up time with them and so forth. So there's no perfect answer, but I think it's just something you're narrowing down as you're getting towards that launch plan. But Beth, curious to hear, or Rowan, how you think about that.
Yeah, no. I want to stay on that topic with Beth. And so when you're advising clients on how to approach, you know, audience segmentation, customer segmentation in a launch plan, and there's many, you know, segments that you can go after. What does that approach look like for audience segmentation? And B, why is this so critical for like targeting the right messages to the right people? Beth, welcome your thoughts.
So these are all really strategic questions, and they're really good questions, and they're hard, and they should be done for launches and for campaigns and anything you're bringing to market. So I like the question from Robert, and I'm going to try to tie that into your question, Rowan, too. You want to figure out your segmentation. And as Tamara said, you can do things by size of company or geography or sector. There's also what we talk a lot about is needs-based segmentation. And it's kind of doing what she talked about doing, kind of like trying to understand who has the strongest need. And trying to figure out what those clusters are, like in sort of establishing what those clusters are. And it could be a combination of like, it's in this sector, but there might be some other sort of qualification that it's like, oh, it's those types of people, but they're really mature, or they're very immature, or they have a Microsoft platform, but not this other platform. And there's all sorts of different types of things that might make the need for your product offering much stronger. And you are looking for those. That's what you're really looking for. And so you do want to start with like opening up, you know, the market and looking everywhere, and you can get that information from a lot of different sources, internal and external, qualitative, quantitative. So that's a big process. But you, if you're in the market, you should be, you know, constantly kind of doing that type of work. And then you want to sort of understand what those needs are, and then to sort of figure out, how do you address these diverse audiences? We have this idea of sort of a hierarchy of campaigns, and it's very similar to what Tamara was talking about. Like, you might have a big campaign really targeting the main focus of the main customer segment, and you might have like sub campaigns that are like, okay, but there's this niche over there and they really have a strong need, but it's only for part of the product or whatever. It's going to maybe the overall message and campaign thing will be the same, but they might have a slightly different message. So there's kind of a hierarchy of a campaign that's overarching, and then you might have like subsets or sort of secondary levels of the campaign for different audiences. But you want to kind of manage them in that way that you see they're part of something holistic, but they have a little bit of different treatment, and that it's sort of the way to keep it organized. But that sort of segmentation is sort of the way to get there. It's the way to narrow this down. I like what Julian said about, this is what we're not doing. This is who we're not going after. I mean, I think that prioritization is really critical in today's world. Otherwise, you will get stuck trying to sell everything to everyone, and you don't really succeed that well doing that.
Love that.
Did that answer your question, Rowan?
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, a lot of people don't, they look superficially from a segmentation perspective. I love that you talk about needs-based and then prioritizing based on the needs-based, because if the need isn't valued by them, there could be a need, but how do you prioritize that need? Then you're going to get a customer that's constantly trying to discount your offering and or churn because they're going to get it cheaper elsewhere. So you want that profitable customer segment that you can go after versus the, my university professor taught me the term margin sucking maggots. You want to stay away from margin sucking maggots and gear towards, you know, the segments that really value what you do per their needs. So yeah, Tamara, can you share an experience where engaging customers early in the process led to a stronger launch outcome?
Yeah. Definitely. This is something I try to do. I've already kind of hinted at that with this, like being involved in the beta program. So I want to take us back to Unbounce. So I was the chief strategy officer at Unbounce for a while. I led product marketing there. And at Unbounce, it's a landing page platform. And what we were trying to do was we were building something called like a smart builder or an AI powered landing page builder. And this was actually a long time ago, but we wanted to build a product that would put our old product out of business. And we had a long roadmap ahead of us, right? Our old builder was like over 10 years old. So we're not going to have feature parity at launch. surprise, surprise. And we actually had this important decision. We wanted to know, you know, in the end, we knew we were going to deliver two pieces of value. It was going to be both faster to build on Smart Builder, but it was also going to be smarter. Like we were going to use all of our conversion data to surface, use this component first, or if you're in this industry or this size of audience, use this structure of landing page and you'll have a higher conversion rate. And what we wanted to understand from customers was first, which was most important to build and which value did they actually prioritize? And so to do this, we spoke to customers because we had a lot of internal opinions about this, right? And so we spoke to customers and we actually did some message testing. And so we put I built two landing pages with our landing page builder, but we had two different versions, one that had the value proposition of building faster and one that had the value proposition of building smarter. And we ran some message testing both in front of customers, just like putting it in front of them, seeing reaction. We used Winter to actually get an outside panel perspective. And we ran paid ads. So what we were able to track across all of those was which value proposition landed like the best and was most resonant. And then we worked with the product team throughout this entire process. And so we were able to, you know, we were building the functionality regardless, but we were able to lead our go-to-market launch with the value proposition that landed. And then we prioritized the rest of the roadmap to keep building on the features that those people preferred the most. And so this led to a much stronger launch than I think we had just listened to internal biases, or honestly, what probably would have happened is if we combined both value propositions, you know, to appease everyone, and then it would have just gotten muddled. So that's kind of what comes to mind for me.
It's a great example because we talk about that with messaging. It's like you got to be very pinpoint. You can't just throw everything in there. It's smarter, it's faster, it's more flexible, it does it all.
Yeah, cheaper, everything.
And so it goes back to that customer audience segmentation. Like if you really understand the folks that you're going to go after and pinpoint, you can then hone in on that one thing that you want to speak about versus, back to your point, talking about the eight amazing, you know, ways you can help this, that segment. So I love that. Julian, your role in just utilizing influencers in a launch strategy, and I don't know many companies that did this better than Gong, I would say, how should product marketers prioritize and engage leveraging influencers? And, you know, analyst relations could be an influencer, media could be an influencer, bloggers, thought leaders in that domain. What are some of the things that you've done to really supercharge your launch efforts using influencers?
I would even add customers, right? Your top customers are actually influencers as well. That's kind of the bridge between what we just talked about with Tamar and Beth and this topic. I'll start by saying that any launch always should feature some kind of external validation. Like we all know that people don't buy just product, they buy because others similar to them or others they look up to bought from you. They buy the buyer experience, they buy from your brand and all of that stuff. We all know this really well. So I think for us, specifically in that kind of crowded rev/sales tech market, we, of course, try to differentiate with product and we make our launches product-centric, but we always add something else on top. Always, always. So it could be a really big customer validation type of push. It could be, as you said, an influencer type strategy, something we did really well at Gong, using some of those, including Morgan and others, right? Like working with the top sales influencers. So I don't have a specific example in mind, but I guess what I want to tell everybody here is think about your product narrative, your product assets, all the product stuff, and then you got to add one, at least one more thing on top to kind of bring that third-party validation to your launch bomb.
Love it. And then I know we're nearing the end of our time here, but just a few more questions for each of you, Tamara and Beth. From an enablement perspective, sales, there's not enough time for sales to learn new things. They hate training. Any tips from an enablement perspective on what could work and what has worked to educate them, enlighten them, entertain them as it relates to a new launch?
So I have a couple ideas. One is kind of this new idea using Gen AI, which I really like, and especially now, like with salespeople, you can't really get them to go anywhere besides where they're already working. So we're in their Salesforce or something. But integrating with Salesforce is actually a challenge. I mean, Salesforce doesn't really, that takes a while. So I think where I've seen success, where I've seen some of my clients really be successful, is like they're integrating with sales and teams and they're sending stuff to sales and teams and they're allowing the salespeople, like they're setting up channels so that salespeople can ask questions. And now I think what Gen AI is very cool is they can use Gen AI, they can ask a question and it goes to a back end repository, or I'm also looking at market and competitive intelligence platforms. It will peruse the sort of, you know, the marketing materials and content and sales battle cards to answer the specific question that the salesperson has. So instead of making them read like a 4-page battle card, they're like, how do I beat Gong? How do I beat Course if I'm Gong or something like that? They'll just ask the question and then the Gen AI will go and look through all the content and be like, here's the weak spots of Gong or Chorus. And here's how, you know, the trap setting questions and here's our differentiators against them. And it just comes back to them and it's super fast and easy. And I think that you want to do all of those things. I think you still want to kind of do training and you want to put things in front of them and give them the collateral and the materials in the sort of standard ways and all the formats and where they are. But this is sort of a really cool way to get them to be able to ask their questions exactly what they want and get a very precise answer back. So I was like, yeah, that's so cool.
Love it. Tamar?
Yeah. Yeah, I think going back to almost what Julian was saying, what comes to mind for me is how do you turn a few sales reps or just I'll say a customer facing person in general into an ally for you internally? Because I agree with you, Rob. Like, it's like another thing that they have on their plate. I have to learn this too. I already have perfected my pitch or I already know the product inside and out. Why should I learn this too? Is it actually that important? But there's always keeners. There's always people with a growth mindset. There's always people who for some reason or another are more willing to learn something. And for each launch, I try to identify who that champion is for me internally.
Wow.
And it could be someone who's really passionate about that subject matter, right? Or it could be someone who is actually underperforming and they need to find a way to show that they can increase their performance. It doesn't always have to be the superstar people. And I work with them to make sure that they're successful. I bring them into the beta programs early. I help them like co-create the assets with me so that they're super bought in. And we already have wins to prove, right? Wow, when this person uses this value prop or they use this technique or they include this messaging, they're able to increase win rate or they're able to feel more confident even just answering support calls. This could even be getting CS people on board. And so it doesn't have to be a lot of people, but when there's someone besides you telling someone they should do something, then they're much more likely to buy into it is something.
Love it.
There's something I want to add, if that's okay. I think some of us, some PMMs out there, they always use the same people for all the target team, right? The tiger team, right? Like I love when people have a tiger team, like that team of internal champions, as you said, Tamara. But I think we tend to always kind of like go to the same people over and over again, like the top AE, the top SC, the top CSM. When, as you said, depending on the launch theme, the product, maybe the segment, SMB, mid-market, enterprise, you should actually have like a rotation of characters and casts on that team. It should vary by the launch itself.
Yeah. And I'm going to build up what Julian said and something that you did where I'm trying to think, was a career gone? But the audience that you sell into, and it touches on what Tamara just alluded to, rather than product marketing, delivering the enablement, if you're selling to a sales individual, if that's your persona, if you're selling to a CISO, you have one of those individuals on in your organization. Leverage them and arm them to provide the enablement to sales because that's the persona that they're selling into. So if your CISO is arming your sales reps on, here's what I want to hear and here's what my team needs, they can now have a bit of a role-playing conversation in this enablement as relates to how to make this real to that persona. And most of the personas we sell into, you have them in your organization. So leverage them. I think, Julian, you leveraged your CRO, I believe, for one of your enablement sessions. So, you know, stroke of genius. We're almost at time here. I got two more questions very quickly. There could be an instance where engineering is innovating and just cranking on releases and products. And they're super proud about it, especially founder-led organizations that are engineering oriented. What is like the ideal cadence for product releases, launches? Beth, you can start and we can go to the others as well. Because there's a flip to that. There's the too many. And, you know, your product marketers are going stark mad and your customers ideally are also going stark mad as well. Or there's not enough. And then your sales reps are complaining that we don't have anything new in the bag. So as such, our quota is suffering, you know, because they always need excuses as to why the quota is not there. What is that ideal cadence for product releases and launches?
So that is sort of like all these other questions. Like there's no ideal. You got to think about your market and your customers. And I think, I don't know, Rowan, you said something earlier. It's like, you know, your customers can't handle new releases so frequently that it's a little bit overwhelming to them. There are markets, though, if you think about, you know, the cybersecurity market, you want those releases to coming out as soon as they're available because they're protecting you from breaches. So totally depends on the market. But in general, I mean, the other thing, I think the other thing that's happening is product managers are getting gold with how frequently they're releasing features. And meanwhile, product marketers are going, what is happening here? So it becomes incumbent on the product marketer to put some sort of categorization or umbrella picture around all these different features or functionalities that are being released and kind of decide what is the, you know, release strategy for all of that, or really more like the launch strategy, because a release kind of can be different from the launch. So some companies are doing is, so that's one thing, is the product marketers need to figure out, how am I going to bucket these things and create something that I can tell a story about instead of just having all these feature coming out with just ad hoc spraying all these different customers. Like, that's very hard to deal with, both for the product marketers and the whole organization and for the customers. But so how is a cohesive, you know, here's a whole bunch of things designed to make you more efficient or more creative or something. So a lot of companies are sort of going with this one big launch a year, and then 6 months later, maybe a sort of secondary launch of like compiling a lot of their like maybe little things into a broader story. And then maybe on the off quarters doing something smaller. So, I mean, they're doing this because they feel like this is the cadence that their customers want, that their customers can absorb. And they use sort of the big events, like at a, you know, industry event or their user conference, to do a big launch and sort of set that up. And it sort of is easier for even the product teams to sort of know that there's this cadence. The customers know there's this cadence. It makes it kind of easier, but it does really depend on the market segment that you're in and the product types of products that you have. So
I agree with you on that. And Tamara and Julian, thoughts on, you guys have handled launches, different cadences, frequencies. What are your thoughts on setting expectations and managing it?
I think finding the right channel is equally important. So completely agree that we shouldn't hold up product release, right? We want to get value into the hands of customers as fast as possible. Ideally, we then want to bucket some of that into larger themes. But like, how do we communicate in between those themes? I remember when I first got to Kajabi, I was like, we need to not talk about all the things we're releasing because we're releasing so fast. And then it turned out I was actually wrong, and that our customers, to Beth's point, wanted to know everything. But I was like, we're not going to email them every time something gets released because we have other things, more important messages that we need to message them. And so what we actually discovered was the right channel. And we found that we had a Facebook group that was like our community. And we said, great, every Friday in the Facebook group, we're going to do something called mission control, where product marketing comes in. We talk about what came out this week. And if nothing came out, we tease maybe something that is coming. We ask for people to get part of beta program. But they know that this is where they're going to go every Friday to hear about this. And then we packaged all those releases into a monthly mission control, where again was one email I got sent out that was like, here's everything they got released this month. And here's a landing page you can go to. And it's kind of like a release log, but more marketing-y. And so for us, that worked, right? So I think you don't need to announce every release on every channel. That would be my one thing to add.
Wow. Good point.
Julian?
I try to keep things simple when it comes to cadences and stuff. I know PMMs, we love our frameworks, and we over-engineer things a little bit sometimes. And like, yes, the tiering and whatnot, but at the minimum, I would do like one tier one product launch every quarter or three times a year, and then one product release marketing every month. That's kind of my, you know, my role. And then you can build off that. But I think if you have a solid emotion, if you hit your install base every month with a product newsletter and webinar and whatnot, as you said, Tamara, then you hit everybody else once a quarter with your bigger product launch.
Beautiful. We are at time. One final tip from each of you. Julian, we'll start with you and stay with you. What is the one tip for those who are tackling launches in their organization?
There's one thing that we didn't quite discuss today, and I really like, is the trend jacking aspect of product launches. I think you have to think through the timing. And sometimes everybody's always too inside out, right? Like, as vendors, we're very self-centered. And so we're like, okay, we're going to release this thing and then we're going to launch it next week. But like, think about what else is happening in the market. How can you jump into the popular conversations already? And I think Salesforce did that really well last week at Dreamforce. It was all about agents, right? Like, they saw that thing coming. It's a big trend right now. they did the trend jacking. So think about the trend jacking aspect of your next product launch. That would be my one advice. I love that.
Trend jacking, yeah. Much like stage jacking, what John Mulaney did to Salesforce last week as well. Different conversation, different day. Tamara, Beth, one final tip.
For me, one goes back to the idea of the customer segmentation of message again, which is get clear on who you're willing to alienate with this launch. So not just who is this not for, but who are you willing to alienate? Because when you're so clear on that, you can get crisp on a launch that feels hyper relevant to the person who you really want to target.
Who are you willing to alienate? I love that. It makes you Beth.
That's a bold statement. That's good. I think, so my thing, I'm sort of, this is, I talk about this all the time. I'm like, I think the launch is something that is happening way downstream and people are like, oh, we got to do this launch. My biggest thing is you need to be thinking about what are we like, sort of to the trend jacking, what is happening in the market? What are needs changing? And you need to be involved so much earlier than a launch. Like you need to be identifying where the market is going, what are competitors doing, what do our buyers want, so that you're not just thinking about a launch, you're thinking about how do we get into that customer segment, how do we keep that customer segment, how do we take advantage of this new technology, and how do we create a roadmap and sort of a series of launches that's going to show like continual innovation and leadership in our market. Like, so I think of a launch as sort of like an output of all that. And so people, you know, product marketers need to be involved much earlier in thinking through those more broader level strategic kind of ideas.
I love it. So being proactive, knowing that rather than reactive, which is what most product marketers are with launches, they're reacting to something that, you know, they get tapped on the shoulder. Instead, what you're saying is be proactive with the marketplace, your competitors, your customers, so that you're getting in front of things and these launches aren't, you know, a surprise to you. I love that. I love that. Well, listen, thank you all for your time. Sorry we went a little bit over. A lot of great insights. As always, appreciate you sharing. Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.